Well, you're in for a really, really great session right now with Simone Zoyo. And Simone is ACFRE is described as one of the most thoughtful, inspirational. I'm reading this, but I actually know she's amazing. You know, so it's like, please understand all this is genuine. Is described as one of the most thoughtful, inspirational, and provocative leaders in the philanthropic sector worldwide. She's guided countless organizations and professionals through her consulting and coaching, teaching and writing. Simone provides consulting services in fund development, strategic planning, and board development to all types and sizes of nonprofits. She speaks at conferences worldwide and is a faculty member for the Master's Program in Philanthropy and Development at St. Mary's University, Minnesota. In June 2013, did we get a yay for that? In June 2013, Simone taught governance to the wives of UN ambassadors from the African nations. Her books, Keep Your Donors, Strategic Fund Development, and the newest, Firing Lousy Board Members, receive rave reviews. She has contributed chapters to multiple other books, writes a popular web column for the Nonprofit Quarterly, and blogs as Simone Uncensored. As a volunteer, are you really
yeah,
mean?
Bored.
Okay, she's bored, so please give it up for Simone Zoyo.
So I apologize right off. I have a bad cold, I have a headache, and I'm dizzy. So... So stay away from me. But I do pace, so I'll be breathing on you as I pace. But you know what? If I tip over or something, just pick me up. So this session ends at 3:30. There is no break. And we're here to talk about governance boards and why and how much we love them and how much we hate them sometimes, etc. So I would like to know first, how many people in this room are development directors that work in the developments? Mary, hi. Excuse me. Okay. How many people in here are CEOs, executive directors? Ooh, very good. All right. How many of you as development officers or CEOs have served or are currently serving on a board? Very good. Because there's nothing quite so awful as not serving on a board and not knowing what it feels to have people like us saying to board members, do stuff. You know, how can you do that? How can you say that to board members if you don't know what it felt like to have somebody do that to you? So we should be serving on boards. Now, Sean came up to me just before we began, come on in, to share with me an absolutely marvelous quotation from a rather spooky source. He's going to start our learning together.
I'm looking forward to this session very much because Simone has written about scandals, shock tactics. Our organization suffered a scandal, and it was 3 years ago. And then yesterday I went to the presentation by Gary Hawkins, I guess, about the Indianapolis Symphony suffered a scandal. So scandals do happen, but I'm reading for leisure a book called Inside the Third Reich by Albert Speer, who was Hitler's architect, who built Nuremberg and so forth. Speer's impression, my impression is he was just doing his job, and a good job, and he did not accept any military post until Todt died, and then Hitler made him Minister of Armaments. So Speer got 20 years in Spandau prison. He used those 20 years to set his mind straight on the entire story and what his position was. And here is his quote. For being in a position to know and nevertheless shunning knowledge creates a direct responsibility for the consequences from the very beginning.
Isn't that quite marvelous? To be in a position to know, and in essence to choose not to know, does make one responsible. So that's an interesting way for us to think about talking about governance and boards. Because everyone in this room, can you still hear me? Okay. Is this working? All right. So everyone in this room has the opportunity to know about what good governance is or isn't and has an opportunity to stand up and speak out. So whether it's in this environment, whether it's around governance, whether it's around fundraising, no matter what it's around, if we choose to know and learn, which obviously you all do because that's why you're here. So one of the interesting things I've noticed over the years, which really makes me increasingly anxious, dissatisfied, whatever, is the apparent struggle between fact, body of knowledge, and personal opinion. So I'd like to distinguish these for a moment, okay? How many people in this room like the work, the art of Pablo Picasso? How many of these people in this room don't like the work of Pablo Picasso? All right. Now, we can like, we can dislike. But here's the next question. Is Pablo Picasso considered one of the seminal artists of all time? Yes, he is. You don't have to like him. But you cannot say he's not an important or seminal artist. Because who says he is? Who says he is? Art historians, experts. There are actually experts. There are spaces up here. I won't bite, sort of. Come on up. So, one of the biggest challenges I believe we have in the philanthropic sector is what I like to call fact deniers, although I think we have a whole hell of a lot of those in the rest of the world, too. So, there is a body of knowledge in governance. There's a body of knowledge in fundraising. There's research. There's experience. There's expertise. We don't get to stand in front of a room, nor do we get to sit at the board table and say, I don't think we should do face-to-face personal solicitation because I don't like it and neither do my friends. What we can talk about is, I'm really sorry you don't like it, but you will have to try to help do it, and we'll help you overcome that. Okay? There's seats over here, in here. All right, so, just like we can't say, I don't like this about governance because I just don't like it, or in my personal opinion, it's not good. It would be like me saying, in my personal opinion, we shouldn't. One of my favorite television shows is called Suits. It's about lawyers. And I know a lot from this television show about the law. About cheating on exams and all sorts of things. But anyway, so when I go to my lawyer to have Jennifer help me do something, and I was just thinking, Jennifer, that kind of like, you know, in my opinion, we shouldn't do it that way.
Right.
And so what do you think?
I think I want to do it my way.
She wants to do it her way. She's the lawyer, okay? So I am, for example, on a worldwide mission to destroy all executive committees of boards. And I'm the woman to do it. And I've got people signing up. But I'm not here to tell you that destroying all executive committees is best practice. All right? On the other hand, I am here to tell you firing lousy board members is best practice. So, one of the challenges we face, because we have wonderful board members, wonderful volunteers who work with us, is that frequently they are experts, aren't they, in their own field? And sometimes they're also very powerful people, you know, like that most important person in your community that we just can't say anything to because otherwise the world will end as we know it. So, yeah, guys, we've got to be the experts in this stuff so that we can say according to research, according to best practice, according to the 5 boards I've served on, as even though I'm your executive director, this is not a good idea. All right? So, you have a very detailed handout. Because my theory is we have detailed handouts so that if we want to go down a different path, You can just look at the handout later. So I would like you to chat with a neighbor. I am a representative of the Oxford University Dictionary Company. We are doing a new version of the dictionary. We have a new rule. You cannot use a form of the word in a definition of the word. And I have invited you here to define the term governance. I do not wish you to write down a bunch of things that is governance. You are here to write a sentence, Eric, a sentence. It would be good, I guess, if it had a noun and a verb, whatever. What is governance? Of course, you cannot use the word govern. You cannot say, well, governance is these five things. No, it is a sentence. I will time you. You may talk to neighbors. Go. What is governance? Okay. I want to hear a sentence that is going to be in the new Oxford University Dictionary that says what governance is. And first, not to pick on anyone, but first, I would like a board member to tell me what governance is. You know, the people we nominate and elect to do governance? No, I'd rather, well, okay. I'd rather a board member. Yell it out.
I don't care which board you're on. You're a board member.
I'm a board member. So we came up with governance is doing the right thing by providing ethical and fiduciary oversight for ultimate responsibility in an organization or an institution.
Someone else? Who else is a board member? What is governance?
Words is very simple. It's the collective oversight and leadership of an organization.
Collective oversight and leadership of an organization. Now I want a development officer. Because if we're going to work in development, we sure better know what governance is.
Individuals fulfill their fiduciary responsibility by leading and overseeing the organization.
Okay, nice. Anybody else? Got one? Sure, okay, go.
Oversee, formalize, and guide a group of individuals and our organization to a better way of living.
Okay. Now, from those definitions, but also from your own conversation, give me key words that are absolutely essential in the concept of corporate governance. Notice I said corporate governance. So I'm not talking about king and queen governance. I'm talking about corporate governance, whether you're a nonprofit or a for-profit. There are seats up here. Yes. Interesting. Contract or agreement. Okay. Yes, ma'am?
Stewardship.
Somebody else? Yes?
Fiduciary.
Oversight. Ethics.
Rules.
Accomplish its mission. Whose mission? The organization's? Yes? Leadership.
Policy.
Okay. Now, remember I start... Yes, go ahead. Accountability. So remember, I started out by saying... I didn't want lists of things. I wanted this sentence, right? Because we will talk about the lists of things. So, to me, one of the single most important things in the concept of corporate governance, which people simply don't seem to understand, is it's a collective activity. What does that mean? It's a collective activity. It's a group, we do it together. That the group participates. So, the words board and board member are not interchangeable. And I spend a significant portion of my time reading your bylaws and your descriptions and all this sort of stuff, and you keep interchanging board member and board. They are a difference that makes... No, let's see how this is phrased. It's a difference that is... What? They are a distinction with a difference. But yes, that was the phrase. Thank you, Milton. The board is the collective. Okay? Now, this is a rather large board in here. But the board is the collective. Does any single member of the board have any more authority than any other? Excuse me, I'm a chair of a board. You're damn right I have more power and authority. Who said no, you don't?
I did.
Good for you. Because no single board member, including the friggin' board chair, has any more authority than anybody else. There is nothing the board chair can decide. Nothing. Like, you know, goody, I get to decide which cookies or which wine to have at the board meeting? Not hardly. I hope the CEO isn't deciding that. I hope the CEO assigned it to Brett, the administrative assistant. Cookies, wine, tonight. Thank you. So one of the biggest problems I see in corporate governance in the nonprofit sector and in the for-profit sector is a failure to understand that it is a collective act, that any decision that is a governance decision belongs to the board. Any decision that isn't a governance decision belongs to management, to the staff. And there is a distinction between a board member and the board. I'm doing a session tomorrow on board chairs and their roles, so I'm not going to talk about it much here. But tomorrow I will be talking about Massachusetts Keith, board chair problem guy. So until your board understands that board and board member are two different concepts, sees how they work together, you're not going to have good governance. Now, within that context for a moment, I want you to think about the implications of the group, all right? So while this is a big board, let's just pretend for a moment that it's not this big and we are a board, okay? What are the implications of the board being a collective, being a group, even though there's a board chair? What are some of the implications? This is about being a group and making group decisions. Yes, what's one implication?
That everyone in the group will be heard and they'll have a voice.
That everyone in the group will be heard and have a voice. Did you like even mean, Kathy, the token father of six kids that we stuck on the board, who, you know, works in the kitchen of the San Antonio school system? I mean, he doesn't have any money or anything, so it's, you know, hardly very important. But we have him on the board and he gets a voice too?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, really. He could probably give $25. Why would he get a voice?
How to get on the board.
Do you know what she just said to me? She just said, well, how do you get on the board if you have a problem with him? What's wrong with having the father of six children who works in the public school kitchen on the board and all he can give is $25? Is there something wrong with that? Right, because he brought something to the table that we wanted. Absolutely. So, Kathy tells us that one of the implications of the concept of a collective with everybody being equal and having a voice is we have to actually listen to each other. Right? We have to design board meetings to listen, to invite conversation. All right, what else is part of the, what's another implication of a collective? Yes. Yes? So about legal, something about legal, right? Very nice. So everyone is legally responsible. Equally responsible. Legally responsible, but also equally responsible. And it works very nicely with how Sean started us out. Absolutely. So what else when we think about the implications of a collective? Yes.
Everyone needs to have the courage to voice their opinion, that they're going to be different opinions.
Okay, very nice. It's a collective. Just because you're more shy than somebody else doesn't mean you don't have to speak out. You don't get to speak out at committee meetings and not at board meetings, because committees aren't doing governance. The board is doing governance. So your silence at the board meeting is unacceptable. You don't have to talk as much as some people. You may process things differently, but you don't get to not talk. We are responsible together. Someone else over here had their number. Yes, ma'am. How? So very interesting, right? All voices are equal. We're supposed to listen. Does that mean that we go around and around and around in circles forever? That's not good meeting management. Does it mean we will disagree? When was the last time any of you were in a board meeting where someone said, "I could not disagree with you more, Beth." And then Beth said back, "Come on, what would you have said back to me in class?"
"Well, I'm sorry that you disagree, but my opinion stands."
Right. So I'm sorry you disagree, but my opinion stands, because this is not a fact denier opinion. This is a decision we're going to all be making together. So when was the last time there was one heck of a good conflict and argument at one of your board meetings? Within the last 6 months? I can't even get my board to talk. So you got the wrong board members. Yeah, no kidding. So the implications of the collective are big. Now, how does the implications of the collective, how could it ever affect fundraising? Okay, so they should be top supporters, whatever is top supporters to them. Right, and they should be the example, yes, exactly. But again, if the concept is the implication of a collective that does governance. I am one of the single largest donors on your board. I'm a regular donor. I've been giving for years. I travel an enormous amount. I can't always make board meetings, but I always send my opinions via email. What? Who chuckled? Some chuckling going on. So, does that make me a good board member? How much do I give? Thank you, Scott. And that's part of the implications of the collective. Me sending my opinions didn't have conversation. And just because I'm one of your largest donors, too damn bad. Because this is governance. This isn't being a big donor. Now, who in this room as fundraisers, Mary, are willing to say the two Simon and Simones need to get the hell off the board because... I don't know, you've got what? You're always in that other place, and somebody else is, and whatever. Okay? Because we're not participating in the conversation. Are you prepared to do that? Good. Is your CEO prepared to lose the money? See, now Julie just said we don't have to lose their money. They just don't have to be on the board. So, there are implications of understanding the concept of governance. But you got two choices here. You either can do it well and hopefully protect your organization, your community, your mission, your cause, or you can decide that there are always exceptions because, after all, so-and-so is special, and if we get Bob off the board, then the world could end, and Christopher will be sad, and he'll tell everybody else he's sad, and it'll all fall apart. So give me names of failures of governance. And I want for-profits and non-profits. Minnesota Orchestra, Penn State, Enron. Yes, three cups of tea. The Gulf oil spill. So why are they governance? Why are we saying these are governance failures as opposed to management failures? The board wasn't paying attention. And so one of the biggest challenges in good governance is how do we sufficiently pay attention without driving Joan, a darn good CEO, so insane that she's going to quit? Okay? Okay, that's really good. They were paying attention and they noticed, but they didn't bother to do anything because they're wimps. Because we're just a nonprofit and it's okay. Because they don't know what they're supposed to be paying attention to. Very nice. Very nice. All right. So, before we go into some specifics around this, I want you to step back a moment and say to yourself, who is responsible in your institution for knowing what good governance is, for knowing what good governance bodies pay attention to, for knowing what kind of a dashboard to create? Who in your institution is responsible for knowing all this stuff? Staff? CEO? Who said the board? You're going to have to talk to me about why it's the board's job to know all this stuff. Because, listen, because it's the board's job to provide the leadership collectively and governance, etc. And how many of you know board members who actually know what governance is? And I didn't ask you how many of you have board members who've served on boards. Most boards I know and have seen, and I've been doing this since 1975, are somewhat to significantly dysfunctional. The board members don't know what good governance is. Half of the board chairs I know, or CEOs, wouldn't know collective if it bit them in the butt. What they know is I'm the CEO of the single largest company in Texas, and what I say goes. They wouldn't know collective if they, as I say, tripped over it. So, I sure do want boards to know some of this stuff. Absolutely. I'd like them to know bunches of it. But there's one person I can demand as a board know this stuff, and that is the CEO or the key staff. You know how many CEO job descriptions I've looked at that don't mention governance in them at all? Zero. Zip. No mention of governance. Wait, do you think that the like board, even best board in the world, is sitting in a room going, okay, what should we be doing? I mean, I know stuff we should be doing, but the one person we can control is the staff, the CEO. So until we even have job descriptions for CEOs that mention governance, what do we think we are doing?
Is that still the case today with all the challenges? Still reading, they don't have that in
there? You understand, I'm not saying every single one of them doesn't have it in there, but yeah, mostly they don't. Mostly they don't. I mean, the CEOs I know aren't reading the Harvard Business Review. They're not... And I don't know, there's far too many board members who do not know what governance is. Even as one gentleman said to me one day, those of you who've been with me at St. Mary's know this, he reached out and he looked at me and he said, with a little pat, "Well, Missy, I've served on more boards than you are old." And I said, But you're wrong, and I'm right. And I was, because I had the IRS handout. So, I firmly believe, but this is where we have to be very careful, I firmly believe that it is our job as staff, chief philanthropy officer for Harvard University, Tory, whatever, that it is our job as staff to learn what good governance is, to learn the body of knowledge, to be reading the Harvard Business Review, to be reading the research, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so that we can partner with our boards, so that we can be peers to our board members, peers to our board members, so that we can go into a room and say, I'm your CEO, yes, I could recommend three things to you, but right now, my first recommendation is you need to talk about this. I'll participate in the conversation, but you need to talk about this. And until we do that really, 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 really well, it's one of the reasons we don't do governance so very well. And then that triggers off into, does our governance committee know how to do this stuff so they can find the right board members, et cetera, et cetera. So the implications, the distinctions between the board and the board member are huge. And the degree to which you look for a CEO who's a governance expert, and the degree to which your CEO looks for development officers who know what governance is. I mean, how many of you have some sort of fund development committee that's, you know, got some board members on it, right? Okay? They don't talk either. All right, we all need to have a moment of silence for Kelly. How many of you have ever been at a fund development committee with some of those board members who say something and you think to yourself, oh my gosh, that's management. That board member must stop and stop now. Well, if we're fundraisers and we didn't know which was governance and which was management and didn't anticipate it so that we never let them go there, what do you think's going to happen? Our job is to set the context over and over and over and stop people from going where they don't go so that we don't have to tell them you can't go there. So every time the three of you on my fund development committee make a suggestion here and there, every single time I have to say, no, name tag. Larry. Larry. Oh, no. It's just not a good, no, that's not a good idea. Angela, well, okay, if we had $4 million, we might be able to do that kind of fundraising event to net about $1 million, but not sure. And you, green sweater? Neil, I've asked you not to raise that issue again. I've asked you so many times. If we don't understand the difference between governance and management, we can't stop them from saying things they shouldn't say and help them to say things they should say so we can have a really good, robust conversation. Yes, how are you? Of course it is. You know me.
Okay. So let's say that you come into an organization where you already have the culture of urban development, and you have a CEO that also doesn't want to do that. What can you do that won't get you fired to...
So, Laura's asking, you know, because frequently the world doesn't start like when we want it to today at, you know, 2:30. So how do we intervene? So there's, our lives are built around prevention and intervention, okay? Prevention is much nicer. I will anticipate X so that I stop the second row from doing X. I will say it in a gracious, amusing manner, and you won't be offended that what I just sort of said was, if you ever raise that again, the world will end. Right? That's the anticipating. But when people already have bad, I mean, you're the one who's a mother. I'm not a mother. So what do you do with Cece when she does something that is like, boy, I wish I'd thought of preventing that. Now I have to intervene. So, well, it's a rhetorical question. No, actually, I'd really like to know. So tell me, everybody, right? What do you do when you have to intervene? Whether it's with your daughter, your son, a committee, your boss, the board. When what's going to go down is bad, wrong-headed, and you not, or it's already gone down, and you have to intervene. You can't prevent it. What do you do to intervene? Other than, oh my gosh, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. We can't do it. How do you intervene? Okay, practice, messaging, work through it, yes? That's nice, but it also, if you restate it, as you've said, Deb, it may, you restating it might imply or suggest or show, wow, that's what I really said? Maybe not so smart. Somebody else, how do you intervene? Yes, Shelley.
Play devil's advocate.
Play devil's advocate. So the concept of asking questions and trying to create a conversation about it is important.
Yeah, and I think it's important that it not come across as some kind of power struggle, that you express it out of concern for the health of the organization.
Of the organization, very nice, very nice. So it's not a power struggle. I will frequently say things, that's interesting, but experience shows or research shows, which means we'd better have the research there to say research shows. Or if we did that, what would be the implications of? Now, an interesting thing to think about is the kinds of questions you would ask if you were being considered for another job, right? And this could be questions board members would ask if they're thinking about going on a board, right? Notice I'm actually saying that there was apparently a conversation before you got nominated to a board, as in a screening interview. Multiple, okay, Michael. A screening interview. If any organization calls you on the telephone and says, hi, we'd like to talk to you about being on your board, that should be a warning. Why? They haven't vetted you. And by saying, hi, we'd like to talk to you about being on our board, after we've interviewed you and we really don't want you, what will we do? No, not if we said, can we talk to you about being on our board? We just screwed ourselves. I mean, what we need to say is we'd like to talk to you about possibly, you know, see if there's some common interests and possibly, you know, work on some things together, perhaps, maybe in the future. Like, you know, we got committees and we have special little advisory whatevers and, you know, board positions some days, possibly, perhaps, in the future, maybe. So it's interesting, Laura, because one of the things that I'd be saying to all of us is, what are the questions we're supposed to ask when we're trying to recruit people from the board, for the board? What are the questions we're hoping they're asking? I mean, really? You want to be on a board so badly you have no questions? Anybody here ever been on a bad board? Okay, so start thinking about questions you want to ask. Think about the questions you want to ask when you become a development officer somewhere. You want to ask anything about the board? Hear anybody? What's one question you want to ask about the board?
Do the board members have position descriptions, volunteer position descriptions?
Do board members have volunteer job descriptions, performance descriptions? Is there an expectation of giving? You know, some, yeah, some. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, do you care? I mean, that would, you know, you're suggesting you might not want to work for us if we don't have all of our board members giving?
Yes, it would. It would show the lack of commitment on the part of the board to the organization. Why would I want to work for an organization like that?
Wouldn't you want to hire her? Yes?
Does the board have an annual evaluation process? What does that look like?
Looks. What's your name, Michael? Look, Michael, we're volunteers. Boy, you people are harsh. So, our first goal is prevention. Our second goal is intervention. There's a distinction between the board and the board member. My favorite definition of governance is the process, whereby a group of people, the collective, ensure the health and effectiveness of the corporation. Who else's job statement could that also be? The CEO, management, the process whereby. But to me, that's the ideal definition of governance, the process whereby a group of people, together, collectively, ensure the health and effectiveness of the corporation. And when do they do that, that group?
When they're together.
Because, you know, again, pretending this is a slightly smaller group, but I don't know, you live in
Minneapolis.
Well, okay, and so we're using Minneapolis. You live in the north part of Minneapolis, and I don't know, you live in St. Paul or something, and we all live around. So how is it that we, like, are doing governance together across these distances? We aren't. We do governance when we're together. It's a collective activity.
But they can do things that hurt and impede governance on their own.
And yes, and that's the individual, precisely. So, when you are recruited to that board, or you're looking at your own institution, do you have the job description of the board? Board. Do you have performance expectations of board members? Those are two different policies, of course related, but two different policies. Adopted by whom? The board. Enforced by whom? With the leadership of? Yeah, and the ultimate leadership, the really other leadership of? The CEO. Because, you know, you were on vacation as the board chair. So, this side of the room, talking to each other, you know, close by talking to people. I want the performance expectations of the individual board member, common to every single board member, including Michael, the two Michaels. Any other Michaels? The two Michaels, the fathers of six children working in the public school system kitchen. So these are the common expectations for all board members. This side of the room, you've got the sort of introductory kind of a sentence, the group process, whereby a group of people ensure the health and effectiveness of the corporation. And now I want, in verb, statements. I want everybody's. These are statements. Don't give me words. It's a statement with a verb. And you're coming up with the job of the board that follows the lovely one sentence. And it's only something that happens when you're together. So, real quickly, can this side of the room say that one of the jobs of a board is to raise money? No, you can't. No, you can't. Listen to me. Your board is a collective, and it does governance in a meeting. You can't say, our job is to raise money. Whose job is it to raise money? You better have individual board members who are expected to give a gift and help raise money. What do we do about raising money as a group, a collective? What will it say? Nice. Set policy, set the goal. Ensure that there is money by looking at things, hiring the right staff, and making board members do stuff. If you can't differentiate that, how can you have a board meeting? Because you're not talking about the right stuff. How can you tell me what my job is as a board member that fits in with the concept of the group and the collective? So, any statements you make on this side of the room around the board has to be something that you could be doing together in the boardroom, doing governance. So go, talk to your neighbor, whatever. Okay. So the first thing I want to know is what was the conversation like? I don't want to know the things you came up with. Oh, it was a difficult conversation. Why? Okay, so we're not used to thinking of a board and a board member as being different, okay? They are. I mean, we just have to, so we're not used to it, but we can get used to it, right? So they are different. They are different. It's like talking about the organization versus the program director. So they are different. What else when you were having the conversation? What was it like? Yes, sir. So, different because of management, CEO, or board-driven. So I will say to you that I firmly believe that the most effective organizations are a partnership between management and board, that a ton of the leadership and the work comes from the management. I mean, I'm sorry. We do it. You don't. But the challenge is to make sure on a board's part. So I had a client a few years ago where I was doing governance. They wanted to look at it from soup to nuts and redo everything. And the board members, particularly when they were together as a board, would constantly say, Kellyanne is just wonderful. She's a wonderful CEO. It's all just marvelous. And she regularly started saying to them, stop it. I'm glad you trust me. But there's trust and verify. And you're not verifying. And all you need to do is get another CEO to come in who may not be as trustworthy as I am. Or furthermore, how do you even know if I'm trustworthy anymore? Because you just keep trusting me. You never ask a decent question. You never ask what kind of information you should be looking at. Now, a good CEO is telling you that. But she's one of the people who led and said, we have to hire a governance consultant so you people we'll start pushing a little bit more. All right, so, and who's going to have this conversation? I mean, you guys are like, this is just perfect. Oh, this is perfect right here because you got the development officer. We're pretending you're the executive director. We have the executive director and the board chair here. They could write this. Furthermore, just copy the stuff I've got in my handout. Well, first of all, yes, you can copy anything I have in my handout and anything that I have on my website, which is dozens and dozens and dozens of free materials. Copy them. I don't care. Why do you think they're there? Okay? But, so do we think they should just, they could do this in the airplane, Marcy. They could take it back to the board for the next board meeting and adopt it. Why don't they do that? Because, despite, what? We have to hire a consultant. Right. Well, first of all, anybody who knows me or has ever spoken with me before, whatever, yes, you should do exactly what I tell you, just the way I tell you. Okay? Because I've got really good stuff, and I have really done it a long time, so you should just all do it and be quiet. Now, I mean, really. No verification. So, right, no verification. It doesn't build understanding and ownership. I would never, ever give my board a draft board job description, performance expectations of individuals as a draft. Never. even though what I would ultimately draft might be what I would have pre-drafted. First, we're going to have a conversation, even if it's for 15 minutes. What does it mean to be a board? If I were the CEO or the board chair, I would raise it to the board that this is something we probably ought to be talking about. Because there's so many bad things happening these days, from Penn State to Rutgers to the BPO hospital, on and on and on, that we want to make sure that we're doing a little health checkup. I sometimes say, so that's just the kind of health checkup nice. And I sometimes mingle that with shock and awe. I'm sure you all, we're in Texas, have heard of shock and awe. Use what it takes to have a conversation. 15 minutes at the board meeting. What do we think board members should be expected to do? What do we think of each other? And then I would say, so the governance committee chaired by Kathy can take this and do some thinking, look at our current policies and procedures, come back and chat with us at a as a board, and then, of course, give us drafts that we would read in advance and come and be prepared to talk about. You have to build understanding and ownership. You don't give people drafts. So, and this is the work of something called the governance committee. We don't use the term nominating committee anymore. It's really old-fashioned and limiting. You can call it a board development committee if you want. So, who do we want to start with? Which side? The board's job description or the board performance expectations? No, the board, because everything starts with the board. Everything starts with the board. The board defines the board member performance expectations. So I'm going to ask you, what sentences did you come up with that are the functions of the board within the concept of governance is the process whereby a group of people ensure that we're a healthy and effective corporation. And so the functions that we do at those board meetings are, what's one? Give me one. Approve the budget. Step back a moment, this side of the room, and come up with some sort of statement that's even broader than the approve the budget that is related to fiscal stuff. Well, that's not related to fiscal. I'm talking about fiscal stuff for a moment.
Ensure financial health.
Ensure financial health. And how do we do that? We approve a budget. We set financial policies. We ensure that management has management financial policies. All right? Now, take what you said about the mission and say it as a function of the board. To me, support is an individual act. That's an individual act. That is not the job of the board. That's an individual performance. What is it? There is something related to the board and mission. So what is it? Set the mission, vision, and values. Ensure that we perform as an institution in keeping with the mission, vision, and values. Anybody have ensure legal and regulatory compliance? All right, so somebody tell me, how do we at a board meeting? This is one of the most exciting board meetings you ever have. The day that we are going to ensure legal and regulatory compliance. I mean, we come in, we're so excited, we can barely stand it. And then what happens? Okay, the audit committee, they have a special little performance kind of. Oh. Okay, with the accountant. What else do we do to ensure legal and regulatory compliance? Okay, we can review the bylaws, sure. Review the 990. When was the last time any board in this room talked about, at a high level, do we have D&O, directors and officers liability insurance? Is it sufficient? What is the most recent case things happening in our state or country or province that suggests we need to know more stuff. And of course, we'll all get in advance, this is the particularly exciting part, the 50 pages of all the relevant laws in the state of Texas or, you know, province of British Columbia or something. We're going to get all those pieces of paper? Of course not. Who's going to read them? We're going to get the memo that says, as a youth organization, these are the key legal issues we have to look at. We've got bringing in our independent insurance agent who's going to talk to us about not only D&O, but it's going to talk to us about the umbrella liability policy we have that's not really high enough anymore. Legal and regulatory compliance. Risk management. Anybody remember Y2K, the olden days? Did you have a board meeting where you said, so, what about Y2K? How many of you talked about Sarbanes-Oxley as a board? How many of you don't know what Sarbanes-Oxley is? So give me another thing that the board does, another function of the board. Yes? Hire, evaluate, if necessary, change the CEO. I served on a board once where we had a CEO performance evaluation task force, which was very nice. You know, that you needed a committee to do. I'm serious. We needed a committee to help do it. Committee sent around an evaluation tool to all the board members. That was wonderful. Myself and a number of other people had some significant performance issues with the CEO. The task force came in and reported at a board meeting that they had conducted the performance appraisal. Thank you very much for sending in your comments. And had extended the contract by 3 years and given a 10% increase. I raised my hand and said, gosh, which I think is a good way to start out frequently. I was wondering, I kind of thought that the task force would come back to the board first. Yeah. And we would then say we agreed or didn't. And then we would decide. And the task force responded with, no, that's not the way we do it. And if you want to try to change this, there'll be a lawsuit. Yeah, they were speaking on behalf of the CEO. And I got to say to you, let's start out with Albert's comment, not, Sean's reading Albert's comment. It's like, we knew it was wrong. But, whatever. And we didn't do anything. That task force should have been fired, removed from the board. And we should have gone back and said, now we're going to start over. So, board job description. Now, let's talk about performance expectations for all the Michaels, as well as the, very powerful CEOs, etc. Performance expectations. Give me one. Attend board meetings. Shelley, I don't want you to forget that I'm the largest single donor and I travel a lot, so I'm not going to be attending them that regularly. So it's attend regularly, I now say. Okay. And obviously there are some people, like myself, who are particularly kind of shy and reticent about talking and stuff, and so I'm going to be pretty silent at board meetings. How's that? Attend and participate. All right? What's another board member expectation? To be part of this group over here, I have to attend, I have to participate. Yeah, I have to what? I have to give a, and you said give or get. No give or get. Absolutely not. Every single board member gives a personal financial contribution every single year to the best of their personal ability. To the best of their personal ability. Right. I actually don't believe in amounts, being specified, because I actually believe in social justice. All right, so give a gift to the personal, to the best personal ability. Yes?
Join a committee, one of the board committees.
Yes. Right. Yes, and I'd be very cautious. Don't imply that I get to choose. The composition of a board is an intentional, we need a this and a that and a that and a this in the composite of the board. All right? And so the board chair and the CEO are sitting there thinking about, where would Kelly best serve? How about Sarah? What do we need with Eric? How about Brian? Okay? And if Brian says he doesn't want this and Kelly doesn't want that, it just made everything fall apart. I expect board members to say things like, you want me on the fundraising committee? You don't want to be on the fundraising committee. Even though I know all the board members are going to help, right? So I was the founder of an organization and the chair of the board, and then I was just a board member. And they said to me, we want you to be on the fundraising event committee. And I said, you know that I will do everything and anything, but you know full well I despise fundraising events. I don't want to go, although I'll go. I do not want to be on the committee. And they said to me, we know that, but we really need you on the committee. And you're a board member, and your obligation is to inconvenience yourself on behalf of the organization. They said that because I'd already told them that. All they were doing was parroting what I was saying. So, I'm going to say, Brian, we really need you on this committee for the following five reasons. Now, if Brian really says, I'm going to cry if you make me, I'm going to vomit, I'm going to have to quit, then we'll think about it. But it's getting a little excessive, buddy. What else do we expect of board members? Yes? We expect them to be informed. I know, shocking. And furthermore, she wanted us to be excited. Engaged. I once was talking to a gentleman who said, yeah, I serve on 10 boards. Like, this was really cool. And I thought, wow, that is not cool at all. I once had somebody say, I'll serve on your board. I'm just going to miss 50% of the meetings because of the other board I serve on. It's that same night. But then, no, you're not going to be on our board. Give me another performance expectation of individual board members. Yes? All right, so be very cautious here. Helping to build relationships, identifying those that might be interested. One of the terrible things I think we do in fundraising is we say to people, we don't say it exactly like this, but this is what I mean. We invited you to be on this board, Ellen. She's the CEO of the largest company. So she's got, you know, I don't know, golf and all those other things with all those other people. And the reason we want her, I mean, she does believe, you know, and she's excited. But we want her because she knows all of you two rows. And you're the movers and shakers in our community. And so you will use your personal and professional relationships to get them. And you're shaking me off. You're saying no.
Well, there's an element of trust here.
Exactly.
Because it's their personal credibility.
Absolutely.
And they have to totally believe that you're
absolutely
not going to screw up their personal brand. Their
exactly.
Personal
exactly. Do not trespass on the personal and professional relationships of your own. And don't expect your board members to. I know, and so does Ellen, which of all these people is interested in the puppy kitty organization, or might be, and the ones who aren't. And so, Ellen has told you, sorry, none of the people on this row are interested in puppies and kitties, and I know that I know them and that they're very wealthy, and I'm not trespassing on those personal and professional relationships. However, I was at an airport the other day, says Ellen, and there was a puppy kitty guy who was just, you know, weeping over puppy kitty pictures in a magazine. And it turns out he lives in our community. And he's coming to the puppy kitty crawl party with me next week. But shame on us as fundraisers. Shame on us that we recruit people with the expectation that they're going to trespass on their personal and professional relationships. My mother lives in Michigan, where I grew up. She gave to the organization in Rhode Island that I founded. Why? Because she's my, right, she's my mommy. I'm her eldest daughter. I do have to introduce myself on the phone, but that's okay. I have not yet told her. I need to remember to tell her that I no longer, I mean, I'm a donor to the organization I founded, but I believe founders need to leave. So I've left. I left years ago. I'm not sure she's still giving, but I ought to tell her, you don't need to give anymore, Mom. I'm not there. All right. One more performance expectation of individual board members. Okie dokie. So that's a very nice introduction to the concept of unity of voice. We had a board meeting. We argued and discussed, and it was actually pretty cool. And then we voted to decide. And here's a choice here. So actually this happened to me. Guy and I, his name is Guy. So there are 11 board members. We had a robust conversation, and we heard everything, and then it started to go in circles, and so the board chair said, enough already. Does anybody have any new things to say? No, that wasn't new, Julie. So we're ready to vote. So just before we voted, one of the other board members said to Guy and me, why don't you just vote yes so it can be unanimous, because obviously the 9 of us, the yes votes, will have it. And what do you think Guy and I said? No, we're not going to vote yes to make it unanimous. We're proud of our no vote. Of course we're going to support it. And when we walk out of this room and a bunch of people say, so I understood you all decided blank, Guy and I are going to say, yes, we had a robust conversation and we all decided, and this is the best answer for us. We don't go, well, yeah, we didn't vote yes. We support the process and the yes. So that's unity of voice. Unanimity is highly overrated. We do not need to be unanimous. What? Yeah. Now, if it's a hugely important issue and we're very, very close in voting, what might we decide to do as a board? Talk about it some more. See if we can get more information or something. Okay. So.
One question.
Yes.
What do you think about secret ballots? My board likes secret ballots.
Wow. Do you remember, did you guys when you were little, like if we did voting sometimes when we were little, we put our heads down and closed our eyes? That's kind of cool, isn't it? Well, no, the counter. Oh, Jennifer. The counter gets known. All right. So, what's your name, sir? I just want the first name. John. John. There's gazillions of Johns. We didn't ask where he was from.
John, I feel so much better.
I'm so glad.
She's the one where the board members don't do anything. Ever. They don't talk. Okay, so... so let's think about this for a moment. What do we, professionally, what do we think are the pros of secret ballots?
If there's somebody in the room that has undue influence in a very public vote...
ooh, nice. Very nice. Some undue influence. Very nice. Yeah. Undue influence, okay. We take around the power. Now, depending on the nature of their influence, we would recuse them from the room, period. They wouldn't participate in a conversation, nor would they vote.
It's
yes.
A sign of bigger dysfunction.
Absolutely. Yes. Somebody else. Yes.
Similarly, if there's someone who is hesitant to voice their honest opinion, they
Right, so, and they're reluctant to voice their opinion, so we'll, write it down. So is it okay to be reluctant to voice your opinion at our board meetings?
No.
No. I'm sorry, it's not. Yes, sir.
Secret ballot is a fundamental part of our democracy, but a board is not a democracy.
Very nice. A board is not a democracy, but what do you really mean by that? Absolutely.
And if it's secret ballot,
they're not owning it. Right, absolutely.
Can you post that on the AMC icon?
Yeah.
I can't remember that.
I can't remember it.
A board is not a democracy. It's a group that's responsible for making decisions together.
Is it ever appropriate to consensus
rather than voting? Is it okay to use consensus rather than voting? So let's talk about what consensus is, okay? So my first understanding of the word consensus is we will talk this to death until we together come to a shared decision that we can all agree upon. So part of it could be exhaustion, yeah, sure. Hold that thought for a second, because I just want to finish the consensus one. So, I think that's a real problem, because it does go back to your comments, sir, about, you know, we're not going to own anything. Now, the Junior Leagues of America have a wonderful, which is, for anybody who knows me in the room, for me to be talking about the Junior Leagues of America is a little bit different. But they have the most wonderful description of the concept of consensus. Consensus means, one, we all know the topic of our discussion. We all have the same information. The executive committee doesn't have extra information they forgot to share. We all have a voice. We are all heard. And then we vote, and we might not all get what we want. That's consensus. We all have the same information. We got the background memo. We talked about it. We have a very good board chair facilitator, because that's the purpose of a board chair, to facilitate. And she knows how to keep certain people quiet, both graciously or seem on stop now, which I respond to very well. And invites someone else to talk, and we talk, and the facilitator, the chair, as facilitator, summarizes and says, does anybody have anything new to add? Hearing none, are we ready to vote? And then we vote. And then we support it. Now, abstentions. I had on the board of the organization I founded when I was chairing it, there was a judge. And there were certain things she could not do or participate in. And so, to protect her ethics, it would say, and Judge Thompson abstained. Or, Judge Brett recused himself during the discussion and the vote, and the minutes actually tell us when he left and when he came back. Yes. So the concept of abstaining is like, what, you're chicken? What, you have no opinions? What, you've never said I abstain and it sounded cool? I don't even understand why people who weren't at the meeting but who read the minutes sometimes abstain. Because they weren't at the meeting, so they abstain. It's like, I don't know. So I'm not big on abstentions. Right, so we had an elected official, or we had somebody who worked in the mayor's office on our board, and she abstained from everything. Everything. You mean just poor Kelly. Okay. So if we go back to the purpose of the board is this collective body that gets together to do governance, then the single most important moment of a board's life is the board meeting. And so the design of a board meeting is vitally important. So I served on a board once where the thing we did regularly at board meetings was we heard reports from committees. Why are you laughing? They were reports from committees. Anybody here not able to read?
I have a program for you.
An L&S program for me. We don't bring together wise, caring people to listen to reports. Those people listen to read reports before they get to the board meeting. We don't need updates from committees that say, we haven't had a meeting yet, but we're going to have a meeting that's going to talk about the stuff at the last meeting that we sent you a report about that then we're going to talk to you about when we come back. Robert's Rules of Order is a stupid rule of order. Really stupid. You never put the least important things on an agenda first. What do you put on an agenda first? The most important thing. And we never put reports on the meeting agenda, committee reports, unless there was actually something to talk about. Okay? Now, certainly we have to hear something about our mission, right? I don't care if it's you brought in one of the kids. That's okay. It's a mission moment. We're going to have some sort of report potentially from the CEO, although in many cases the CEO is going to be participating in other reports or pieces of information. So we don't have committee reports unless there's something to actually talk about. The purpose of committees is not to give reports, nor is it to make recommendations only. Really good committees at the end of every committee meeting say to themselves, is there anything to report to the board? Okay, put it in an email. Put it in a report. Is there anything we need to engage the board in a conversation about? Then let's get on the agenda and figure out how we're going to have this conversation. I am very cautious about having committees make recommendations when it should have been a conversation with the board. It won't be as in-depth as the committee meeting, but we don't just make recommendations because you know what that produces? Boring boards. Committees are not doing governance. They help the board do governance. So the design of the board meeting is to bring these wise people together to have a conversation. That's why we got the background paper. And yes, it took 30 minutes to read. And we brought our material to the board meeting. There is nothing quite as sad as to see staff at a board meeting watching you open the sealed envelope. I, as a board chair, and even when I was a development officer, made sure that the rule was, you didn't bring your material? I don't know, share with somebody. It was sent in advance. No extra copies. No extra copies. It kills trees and it wastes time. And what's really fun when you start doing that is so somebody says, Davina says, I didn't bring my material. I had to go to the other meeting. Can I have an extra copy? And I say, no, share with somebody. So Davina says, Kathleen, you have your material, except that Kathleen doesn't have hers either. But Jane has hers, and what's your name? Adam has his, and so you share with Adam, who passes his down to here. It's just wonderful to watch them negotiating all this. First, they try to engage, like, the board chair and staff in it. And then the next time, they realize maybe the shame of not having brought my materials or having read them is enough to subtly say, yo, Adam, can you pass your copy down? So board meetings are designed for conversation And sometimes they're designed for decision making, but sometimes there's no decision to be made. And if your board members aren't engaged in your board and engaged in board meetings, it's probably because your board meetings are dull and boring. They are. Well, make them undull and boring. Yes?
What's your opinion?
I believe that the CEO is a peer to all board members, and that the CEO talks and does, you know, just like any other board meeting member. And the smart CEO makes sure the board members talk first often. So the CEO does not dominate, and the CEO certainly doesn't run the board meeting. Some organizations have CEOs who vote, and some don't. I actually don't care. You know why? Because if I don't, it doesn't matter if I don't have a vote as a CEO. I've got one hell of a good voice. I am thoughtful, planful, etc. So I don't care if I have a vote or not. I also, because in the for-profit sector, CEOs typically do have a vote, I don't have any problem with the CEO having a vote. It's one vote. The world doesn't end either way. Yes? All the time. So this is about committees, okay? And it's what I said just a few minutes ago, which is I believe that committees at the end of their meetings say, do we have something to report? Do we have something to recommend? Or is it most appropriate for us to engage the board in a conversation? So if the committee looked at something and narrowed something from 5 to 3, they can say to the board, these were the criteria we used to narrow it from 5 to 3. You got that in the background paper, so you understood everything. We want the board to engage in a conversation and the board to decide we refuse to make a recommendation. This is a strategic judgment. All right? On the other hand, if I were the finance committee and we had to pick a new auditor, all right, I would have had a conversation with the board about auditors and the criteria we were looking for, and then I would have said to the board, as the finance committee, since you've all participated in the criteria and you looked at what we thought, we are going to go forth with your support and we are going to interview the 3 audit programs, projects, prospects, and come back and recommend one for action given the conversation we've had as a board about criteria. It's a judgment. And we tend to opt for committees discuss and recommend and the board react. And there's tons of times when that should absolutely not happen. It's bad. So this is about meeting management and facilitation and the ability of people to do that.
Can you go back to staff at board meetings?
You
talk about the
yes.
CEO, but what other...
Okay, so as a development officer, I went to board meetings. I was very... Oh, my God, of course. The senior development officer goes to the board meetings. I was very, very close to my CEO. Very close. But I had been an executive director where my staff came to board meetings. And they learned not to say anything unless called upon. So I would go to the board meetings as the development officer. I would mingle with board members beforehand. And I would sit at the table, because all the senior staff sat at the table. And I would not speak unless called upon. I would even write notes to my CEO saying, I have the answer. I am brilliant. Call on me. I would make faces at him. Sometimes he would call on me. And then sometimes he wouldn't. I would confront him afterwards when he hadn't called on me. I would say, Tim, why did you not call on me? Sometimes he would say, because I didn't feel like it. Sometimes he would say, because strategically I made the decision that to introduce a new voice, particularly whatever, but he never didn't trust me to not say anything or to say something if I wasn't supposed to, or something. Yes?
I would
like to know, by a show of hands, if people in this room, how many development offices sit at the table at a board meeting, and how many of them sit behind the board meetings?
So
how many sit at the table? How many sit along the wall behind the table? In how many cases is that because the table doesn't hold enough people or space? Right, and if it doesn't, and you can't just have the development officer at the board meeting. If you're going to have the development officer, I'm assuming you're having the senior program leader. So, yeah. But again, so it's to me it is a statement when we sit behind, even though when we sit at, we don't talk unless spoken to. But part of this, you have to figure out if that's a space issue. Yes. Yes. Are they ever a place for discipline?
Or is the governance committee?
An executive session of the board would be a disciplinary session for staff, but only the CEO.
What about the board?
All right, so I believe in firing lousy board members. Okay? I have a book on it. I've done it as a board chair, as an executive director, and on and on and on. But I do not believe in voting people off the board. So, excuse me. By that I mean, your bylaws should state that you can vote people off the board. But that's going to be embarrassing. I never want to embarrass anybody. I want them to still be donors. I want them to not badmouth us. So when I'm firing lousy board members, I'm sorry. When I'm firing lousy board members, I'm having a private chat as a member of the governance committee with them. And I'm encouraging them to self-identify, to step off. And if they don't self-identify to step off, the governance committee has permission to remove them. And then we just report to the board that Bob had to leave due to personal issues. No, not to me, though. The chairman of the board, the chair of the board knows it's happening, but it is a governance committee action.
So who specifically is in that meeting? The CEO?
Pardon? So, the CEO, of course, is the staff person to the governance committee. If at all possible, you should avoid the CEO having any visible position in the removal process. They were at the governance committee when we said, oh my God, yeah, boy, do we ever have to get rid of Bob. But they're not involved in it because it's a challenge given the fact that they're the CEO and hired by the board. Then this is not a board chair action. This is a governance committee action, and it's about saving face. So this is in gory detail in my book, Firing Lousy Board Members, and it's a really thin book. I'm sorry.
Should the board make decisions as far as like voting to hire vendors? Like we're doing a capital campaign, and we're interviewing, the development committee is interviewing street companies.
Well, that's going to, so part of that is going to be a decision around in your own institution's financial policies about whether, in fact, X requires a board vote. Yeah. As a consultant, I can tell you that I won't work with any organization in strategic planning, governance work, or fund development work without having had board members participate in the interview for me because it's board work. So the board can recommend that, the committee can recommend whatever rule you set up for that situation. But I won't work with anybody in an organization because all of my work relates to the board, and the board members have to have been part of the interview process, a number of them. Yes. So one of the things that Wendy's interested in, and this is a question for all of us, is the dashboard. So everybody knows what a dashboard is. You know, it's the new N word for the information we're given at the board meeting or before the board meeting to look at, see the health of the institution. And so if you're the board, because you are all board members or soon to be, or were once, what information do you want to look at as a board related to fundraising progress at a board meeting? What's the single most important thing you want to look at? Say what? How far are we to go? Okay. Compared to the prior year. Net revenue and retention.
Forecast.
The single most important thing I would ever want to look at is retention rates. Loyalty. It's what makes the world go round. So there's all sorts of samples of of dashboards that you can share with colleagues or that you've seen in different places. See them on the net and that sort of thing. Okay, a final thought. And this relates to committees, but it mostly relates to the board. And it's the concept of conversation, right? Our world is built on discussion, and there's a difference between discussion and conversation. If you haven't read Systems Thinking and Learning Organization Theory, I strongly urge you to do so. A guy named Peter Senge, S-E-N-G-E. And then in my book, Strategic Fund Development, I've done a lot of explanation around learning organization and systems thinking business theories. And the concept of conversation is that we actually listen and hear, and that we question and we challenge our own assumptions and those of others in order to cobble together or put together the right answer for that moment in our organization. This is inquiry instead of advocacy. So think about this for a moment. You're going to a staff meeting or a board meeting, right? You know what the topic is. And we'll just use the concept of what we're going to have for dinner tonight. But this is really serious, not just... Okay. So, this side of the room is really into vegetarian chili. And that's your individual life experience, and that this would be the best choice. This side of the room is really into beef burgundy, except for like the last couple rows, who are the undecideds. So, you're trying to convince whom to switch over to vegetarian chili? Everybody and anybody, right? And, well, the undecideds, but some more too would be good. But you're trying to convince the undecideds and some of them to go for beef burgundy. We're so busy trying to advocate for our position that we're not hearing some of the brilliant thoughts that are coming out, right? But if we stop that, if we say, forget advocacy, stop a minute and say, wow, wow, Jacques, is your assumption X? He goes, yes. And I go, I hadn't thought of that. So it turns out that neither vegetarian chili nor beef burgundy were the best answer. Oh my gosh, it was a cheese souffle. We don't know that if we're so busy advocating. We have to get better at real conversation, listening and hearing, because that's why we bring you together as a board. Because of that expertise you have and those insights so that we can hear and have these conversations. So, yes. And so the rule is, another thing that we have to have at our performance expectations is we don't have sidebar conversations. We don't go out and talk afterwards. We talk at the board meeting. And our job as staff or a fellow board member is to say, I'm sorry, that's something you have to bring up with the group. It belongs to the group. It's something you have to bring up with the group. One of the worst things that happens in boards is that the rest of us are chicken, and we let the board chair have to deal with this. You can't be chicken. You have to say, don't do that. Somebody just had a hand up. Yes. Yes, absolutely. So that also suggests we have agendas that are so too long. Meetings begin and end on time, and this one has to end shortly. Meetings begin and end on time. You don't repeat because someone left. Because someone wasn't at the meeting, you don't repeat it the next time. I'm sorry, we already decided. We're not deciding again, and we're not talking about this again. And you owe that to each other. Don't wait for the board chair to have to say it. You can say, I'm sorry, we already voted on that the last meeting. I don't want to talk about it again. Do not be dysfunctionally polite. It's how you lose good people. It's how you lose good people. And your board meeting agendas shouldn't be really long. But once you've gotten rid of the committee reports, they're not that long. Yes. The CEO and the board. So this, I expect the CEO to bring this sort of stuff up, to bring it up at the governance committee, to bring it up to the board chair. One of the best ways to avoid a bad board chair, because you didn't prevent getting him or her in the first place, is you make sure the CEO can talk to any board member she or he wants. You don't have to go through the board chair. And you go to the governance committee and you start talking about these things. We should have ground rules for conversation. We should have performance expectations. We should have all these sorts of things. And so use shock and awe or use health checkups or anything you have to do this. Okay. So this was intended as a sort of a, as tough as I could be, sort of conversation about things we should be looking at. You have a very lengthy handout. I'm serious. You can use any of the stuff you want. I don't care. These can be guidelines. This can be a resource for the next iteration of your governance committee. There's a lot more stuff on my website, although this is some of the best of my governance stuff. There's an article on destroying executive committees and an article on firing lousy board members on my website. There are evaluation tools, all sorts of things. It is so far past time for us to make governance better. I mean, when you think about it, it's scandal after scandal after scandal, and we can go back to Sean's starting quote from good old Al. There is information about this stuff. Enough already. Let's get it together and fix it. It's my name, simonjoyeau.com, and it's on the handout. I have a free newsletter, monthly newsletter, and a weekly blog where I just, you know, talk about stuff. So my book, well, so I have three books. Okay. One is Firing Lousy Board Members, which is just out there. I just came out. I have a book called Keep Your Donors, written with my partner, Tom Ahern. And I have a book called Strategic Fund Development, where I talk a lot about learning organization theory and conversation and all that sort of stuff. Peter Senge is the sort of inventor of learning organization theory. He's got a book called The Fifth Discipline, which is very academic. He's also got a book called The Fifth Discipline Fieldbook. Okay, I'll hang around for a few minutes if anybody has any other questions, and come and learn about bad board chairs tomorrow.